Accession number 32720, Reel 2.
I managed to get through, and for 10 or 12 nights, I successfully evaded. I finally got to where I could hear the big guns, and then I could hear the smaller guns, the machine gun fire, and then I could hear the rifle fire. You know, machine gun is a much heavy caliber gun. All of a sudden, I get where I could hear the smaller caliber guns. So I knew I was coming up on the rear end of the German lines. And I figured my best bet to survive is to hold up and hope the American advance continues and let the Americans overrun me rather than try and get between the German and the American lines and gain my liberty. So I went into a clump of woods, and I don't know how many of you have been around southern Germany, but some parts of southern Germany look like Columbus Park. And then all of a sudden you'll come upon a very beautiful clump of woods, good hardwood trees, and it's you can run across these fields and go from wood to wood. And I would spend the days watching the slave labor in the fields. It was spring, and they were planting potatoes. I'd watch them plant 50 jillion potatoes. You go down to that field at midnight, try and find one potato. Yeah, I dug up one. They must have thought they had more raccoons in southern Germany. I dug up more fields looking for one potato. But at any rate, I holed up. I got into what I thought was a good clump of woods. And would you believe that was the clump of woods that the Americans decided to shell? And I don't know how many of you have seen it, what happens in a tree burst. But when a cannon shot hits a tree, the burst is unbelievable. Shards of wood actually stick in the trees. It's just under the explosion. It's frightening. And I didn't realize, but I wasn't the only guy holding it up in those woods, and the Americans knew that. I didn't. I jumped up and started to run to get myself out of there in a panic, really, to get to another clump of woods. And I immediately ran into about, I would say, 20 or 25 SSers who were doing exactly the same thing I was doing. They were getting the hell out of there. They didn't have any prisoner-taking thoughts in their mind at all. I didn't even have a chance to draw my gun. I was in the middle. I ran right into them. They disarmed me, and I still recall I'd know him if he walked in here tonight or today. The guy took my .45, and he stood about 2 feet away from me, and he said, "For you, the war is over." And he shot me. And I can still remember seeing my hand go like that as I went through the air. And we later determined that the bullet went through my shirt pocket, through that little AGO card you carry. I had my AGO card, it went through the card. But for the grace of God, you know, the bullet went through my liver, damaged the bladder, which is why I'm peeing on every post, and kind of bounced off the back of one and went out. They left, and I guess it was 4 or 5 days later, I came to. And was very uncomfortable, but I remember I came to, and it was wet. You know, the blood was still bleeding. Then I remember the next time I came to, all this was dry. I had stopped bleeding, and I was laying there. And here comes a German farmer with a cart, a horse pulling the cart. And he's walking along, and I'm watching. He's checking a body way over there, checking a body over here. He comes over, and he looks at me, and he sees I'm alive. wasn't going to try and take any watches or gold teeth from me. And he had never seen a German flying suit. And I was wearing an American flying suit. But he thought he had a German pilot. So he loaded me onto his cart, and I don't know how far we went, but I was in and out of consciousness. And he took me into this town, which I later determined was the town of Voisbongen in Germany, and turned me over to the local hospital. My guess is our intelligence people told me he probably thought he was going to get a reward for being a German pilot. They probably kicked him in the hind end for bringing me in. But anyway, I was laying on a gurney there, and these people in totally different, strange language to me, in German, of course, were talking back and forth. And the doctor spoke a little bit of English. And he said to me, I happened to be Catholic, and I was wearing a crucifix, and he got this crucifix in his hand, and he's waving it at my face. He said, "Catholic, Catholic." I finally realized he was saying Catholic. I said, "Yeah." He said, "There are no priests." I said, "I know that." He said, "You've been shot in the liver, and you're dying." I said, "Okay, well, I'm shot in the liver." And he said, "If you want to write a note for your mother and father," he said, "I'll give you a pencil and paper, and I'll give it to the Americans when they come." And I didn't say this to him, but what the hell have I got to say to my mother and father? You know, your mom and dad, you know, whatever. So I said, I don't want to write a note. He said, "Okay." And he talked with these other people, and then he leaned over my face, and he whispered into my ear, he said, "I'm a Jew. I thought to myself, you know, trying to get my act together, is he or isn't he?" But he said that's all he said. Next thing I know, I'm in a room with a guard on it, and here comes these Lutheran nuns, and they're reading the Bible over me in Jewish, everything in German. And as I say, that began the yo-yo of being interrogated in the morning by the military, and being in the loving care of these nuns every night and every evening. The doctor and I became very good friends. And there was no doubt in my mind that he was a Jewish guy. He had, you can imagine this, 6,000 patients, plus the hospital full of German soldiers, plus now the worry of this damn American. And the military kept saying, "We want that American, we're going to take him." He would say, "Okay, who's going to sign for him?" Now, I don't know how many of you know the psyche of the German mind, but you sign for everything. And if you sign for it, it's yours. And it's your responsibility. Well, nobody wanted to sign for it. Nobody would sign for it. So they come and fall. They give me hell every day. But they wouldn't take me. But he kept telling me, they're going to get you. They want, and they're going to get you. And he said, we're going to do our best to protect you, but they're going to get you. So I don't know how many days went by. That's when I had the experience of 60 years ago today, them running in and telling me that Roosevelt was dead. One of the highlights of the week or that month I was there was to be able to tell them that Stalin was going to be the new guy. But he finally came to me one day and said, they're going to take you tomorrow morning. He said, "They're going to start pulling out of here, and they're taking you with them." He said, "So we got to get you out of here." And needless to say, I was not in the best of shape. You know, I mentioned it was the spring of the year, for the doctor. My room I was in was one floor up, not very high, about 10 or 15 feet off the ground. They were spreading manure on the hospital grounds because it was spring. And he had a load of manure put under my window. So that night, they brought me my flying suit, my shoes. They dressed me up, and out the window I went into the biggest pile of shit. And if you think, you know, I wasn't aromatic. That was my glorious escape. I wasn't very mobile, so I took off down the first road that I could find, and the first time I came to a, come on, help me, what do you call them? A viaduct, a culvert. God, thanks. The first culvert I came to, I crawled in it, and that was going to be my spot, because I really couldn't go much further, and I had started to bleed a little again. So I decided, you know, this is my spot. So I got in there, and things were fairly quiet. And then all of a sudden, I could hear the German tanks. First of all, German vehicles, motorcycles, soldiers marching over my culvert, pulling out. Then the German tanks, and you could tell them, the German tank, for those of you who have heard, their engines were always high RPM. Even their planes are high RPM, if you recall. And their tanks would whine when they'd come across. So I could hear them come, and they'd go across the culvert, across the culvert. And I laid there another day or two. Not a sound. Just really a no-man's-land sound. Then I could hear the rumble of those Chrysler engines. That engine rumbled. It didn't whine. It was a rumble. And I could hear those rumbles. Fortunately for me, the 14th Armored Division had taken a group of tanks, and sent them 65 miles into the German lines just to feel and see what was going on up there. So these guys were 65 miles beyond their lines when they went over my culvert. And I knew, I could hear them hollering at each other in English, you know. I crawled out of the culvert, and the tank sitting up on top of the culvert was about 12 feet high, and there was a black guy about 14 feet high standing in the top of the tank with an old Thompson submachine gun. And I said, "Hey." He turned with that gun and looked at me, and I said, "I'm an American." He said, "White boy, I don't care who you are. Don't make a move. Don't you make a move." I said, "Don't you worry. I'm not going to make a move." Well, they jumped out of the tank and came down, and it wasn't long till they established that they had an American pilot on their hands, and they were elated. Oh, God, they were like dancing in the streets. They had actually rescued an American pilot, and they had. The first thing they did is said, "God, the guy's wounded. You know, get him. No medics." They said, "Get him some blankets." Well, they took about 20 blankets, laid them down. They laid me on the blankets. "Give him some food." And they had liberated a bunch of eggs. So they boiled these eggs up, and I'm eating the eggs. "Give them some whiskey." They gave me a 4 or 5 shots of that Calvados brandy, you know. Wow. Oh, God, I was sick. Oh, God, was I sick. So they called back to the base, and they said, "We got this pilot. He's wounded. He's bleeding. We can't put him in the tank because they said, don't put him in the tank. Keep him right there. And they said, well, what the hell are we doing? We want to come back. We're pulling back. Don't you pull out. So that night, they set up a ring of tanks, and we spent the night 65 miles into the German lines with no problem while we waited four or five hours or so for an ambulance to make its way up to where we were. And I still remember the lieutenant jumping out of the ambulance and running over to me with his little case and kneeling over and looking at me and said, oh my God, guys, who gave this guy, he's so drunk. Well, that really is the story of my rescue. I went on to put up with I joined all kinds of other Czechs and Poles and Jewish people that were pouring out of Germany, and they were flying us back to France as quick as they could. I spent 40 or 50 days in a hospital, an American field hospital, where I was rescued of all things by General Doolittle's plane, Captain. I sent a message back to my air base through an intelligence guy I met and said, tell him I'm a prisoner of the America, 250th General Hospital outside of Paris, and they tell me I'm going to be here 90 days. About 2 days later, the nurse came and said, who do you know? I said, I don't know anybody. She said, well, General Doolittle's plane is on the runway out at Orléans Airport, and you're to report back to Doolittle's headquarters, blah, blah. And they put me on the plane and took me back to England. Thanks to my friends at our base who got to Doolittle's office, and Doolittle sent his personal plane. So I was the only guy on Doolittle's personal plane flying back across the English Channel, drinking tea and eating biscuits. Just unbelievable things happen to all of us. And we're here. Those of us who serve are here. And that means each one of us were in the right spot.
Yeah.
We were all in the right spot. And, I'm preaching to the choir here. I don't have to tell you how important it is that we don't let anybody ever forget how important that war was to all of us. And, I think of my comrades every day, and I pray for them every day. And I'm sure you guys do too. As I say, I'm preaching to the choir. I don't have to tell you to think about those guys laying on the beaches or seeing the guys, seeing a B-24 spin in with 10 or 12 guys on it. And you know that not one shoot, you watch it go in. You don't see a shoot. As I say, I really appreciate being here and being part of what all of you are. It's important to me and will be all my life. And I thank you for what you're doing to keep that message alive. And I thank you.
Difficult to find adequate words to express our appreciation for your service, not only in the military, but you've been a role model in your civilian life. You've addressed yourself to the peaceful side of life, which is what all of us want. For you, just a little memento for all of us. God bless you. Thank you so much. Yes, Sam.
Take it easy.